Welcome, everyone, to today's webinar, Website Improvements for More Successful E-Commerce from Landing Page to Shopping Cart. You'll be shown how to leverage website personalization and increase engagement with your visitors for better e-commerce performance. My name is Audra Besner, Marketing Manager for Sitecore Canada, and I'll be your moderator today. We are recording today's webinar, and we will send attendees a link to the recorded presentation and PowerPoint slides within a couple of days. If you have questions or comments during the live webinar, please post them in the dialogue window on your webinar toolbar or via the Twitter discussion with hashtag Landing2Cart. Presenting on the topic today is Erica Kierstedt, Product Marketing Manager for e-commerce at Sitecore. Erica has an extensive background in web technology with the better part of a decade focused exclusively on web content management and e-commerce. A believer that online retailing can benefit from the wisdom of WCM best practices, she has turned her focus to improving the e-commerce experience from all sides. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you, Audra, and thanks to all of you for taking the time to join me today. I hope you'll find it informative. First thing I want to do is just, for those of you that haven't been on one of our webinars before, I wanted to tell you a little bit about Sitecore before we jump in. So Sitecore is one of the leading enterprise content management vendors. We're best known for our web content management in the marketplace today, and we focus pretty much in mid to large size organizations around the world. And we actually do have quite a presence across the globe, and we have 10 offices in 10 countries across the globe and partners in more than 50 countries. So we've been around, and we've actually been around since 1999. We have more than 2,500 clients and managing probably a total of more than 30,000 websites. And as part of that, we work with all kinds of customers, and we've seen all kinds of industries and markets. And one that we do have the advantage of working with is online retailers. So we do benefit from the knowledge and the information that they share my way and our way with best practices and what they see happening. So that's helpful when we're building presentations like this. So as you know, today we're going to be talking about e-commerce and some of the things that make it successful for certain merchants. We're going to address some of the tactics that they use and how those tactics make them successful. More importantly, we're going to focus on the ones that you can do or implement to make some success-enhancing changes to your own e-commerce sites or those of the sites that you work with. So my goal for today really is that you kind of come away with some ideas and some insights. One thing I do want to say before I get started is that we're going to pretty much leave the platform technology angle out of it. For me today, it's about the customer and what will make them buy and keep coming back. So also, bear in mind that we can't cover everything that you could do to your site to make it better. I mean, there isn't enough time, especially not in this webinar. But I think I did a pretty good job of picking the ones that you should think about probably first. And with that in mind, I thought that it would be probably prudent to sort of boil everything down and simplify it for this for who we're talking about, instead of saying, you know, retailers are all different sizes and they sell all kinds of different products, and you have one making 25 million and 1 million. So basically, I'm going to boil them all down to just the online retailers, just for the purposes of this webinar. So we're going to talk about the website improvements they can make and you can make. So think of them just generically today. However, there are specific tactics that are great for retailers that sell certain products and into certain markets of different sizes. But again, each one of those would be its own webinar, I think. So maybe someday. But for today, we're just going to sort of boil it down and keep it generic and keep it high level. So we think that you'll learn about today will make your site more effective, no matter who you are. I mean, these are sort of ones that can apply to everybody. And when you're thinking about making changes to your site, which is hopefully why you came to this webinar, to get some ideas and some insight, here's just a little bit of incentive. Now, is it smart to make e-commerce site improvements? Well, Forrester seems to think so, because if you look at the size of the market in 2015, which really isn't too far away, that's pretty big. So I know I would want a piece of that. So I'd say, yeah, it's worth trying a few improvements, at least trying to see if you can't make it a little bit better. So something to think about, and I think this is why you'll find a lot of e-commerce platforms changing, or a lot of people looking to switch providers and sort of like up their game, and it's because they're facing tougher customers, and that's that's pretty well known. They're not just looking for free shipping and the lowest price and or anything like that. So they're really looking for an experience, and they expect more, and that may be part of the whole social networking thing, and the Facebook and Twitter. People expect to be engaged. They expect to form relationships. They want to form relationships, which as a retailer should make you happy because you love return business and repeat customers. So if you get a customer that keeps coming back and is happy, they're going to probably go out to their Twitter account or their Facebook account and say how much they like you, which is great. So it makes a tougher customer a little bit easier. But at the same time, you can't shirk on things like personalization, which we're going to get into a little later. Personalization at a very highest level is going to let your customer feel like you know them. You're going to pretty much tailor their shopping experience to be unique, and they're going to say, wow, they really know me. And that's also about remembering who they were and looking at their past history and everything. And to really them, I mean, don't think about it as e-commerce anymore, because for your customer, it's pretty much an e-commerce, because it's all about me. It's all about my customer. And that's how they feel they should be treated. And you know what? It's going to keep going that way. So it's best to sort of start on that now. So before we start talking about some enhancements you can make, I thought it was interesting to point out that a lot of the principles that we notice in web content management kind of translate into e-commerce pretty well, especially that personalization angle. I mean, I think it was just only a matter of time, you know, figuring that each website we go to, you know, now tries to personalize it for us, and they try to remember who we are, which is great. I mean, I definitely prefer going to online retailers that remember me. I feel like that relationship is there, and they sort of take advantage of that and sort of send me offers, you know, that they might not send to someone that wasn't a regular customer. So first thing I want to talk about is the homepage. Now, I think of the homepage as your virtual front door, and I like this graphic here because all kinds of doors. I think they're French doors, or doors from France. But I want to say that while all the doors can be different, you know, there are all kinds of different websites, but there's one principle that remains, that's your front door. So the thing is that, thanks to search engines, it's not often customers are going to come to your homepage first. They're probably going to come to a different part of your site, but which is actually why it's probably a good practice to treat every page like it is your homepage. But for the purposes of this discussion, we're going to talk about how keeping a clean, uncluttered, and non-confusing homepage is really a good place to start. So if you're thinking of making changes, that would be the first place I'd look at my site and check out my homepage and see how mine looks. And I'm actually going to talk about one in the next few slides that I think exemplifies the best of what you can do. So the first thing that a customer coming to your site should be able to tell what you're selling. They shouldn't be confused. They shouldn't be overloaded with like flashing and things like that, and they shouldn't have to like squint to read it. It should really be clean, uncluttered, and simple to get an understanding of what you're doing there. But it's also an opportunity to be a visionary. So think about being creative. Because remember, this is you have to differentiate yourself from your competitors. So it's also a good place to do that. So I want to talk about Zappos.com. They're not a Psycho customer, but I'm a customer of Zappos for many, many years. I've watched their website sort of transition over the years, and it's been pretty great. I think that this is a great example of a homepage because it actually has an overwhelming amount of information, but it's not at all cluttered, it's not at all confusing, and it's really laid out well for the amount of information that's here. You notice along the top they have the customer service number, which I feel is a really good thing to have on your front page, and if you can have a toll-free number, even better. Customers really, really like that. You can see over on the right side, there's things like get to the blogs, you can get to your cart, you can get to help, you can see their return policy, you can see that they highlight their free shipping, and you can get anywhere on their site. And even above the fold, you can see that they highlight their, which I think is really great about them, which is free shipping and free returns. You can return things for a whole year, and what they see their customer service, and they get a little quirky there at the end and say, happiness, that's one of their policies, which they actually are. If you ever had to call them on the phone, which I have, they really are happy, nice people. So anyway, what I wanted to say, something else, is about the whole free shipping thing. If you can do it, free or reduced shipping, I think that's a good way to win customers, at least in the beginning. shoppers kind of see shipping as a burden, although they really shouldn't. But they kind of do. They don't want to pay for it. But so this is what I think is a really good example of a home page that's kind of built for success from the very beginning. And the pages on the inside of the site are just as good. There's tons of information, but it's not cluttered or confusing. So I would give that an A. The next thing I wanted to talk about is product information. Now, this is really important because it's what you're selling. It's your backbone. If you don't sell them, you're not really going to have a website or a business to worry about. So it's important to pay attention to things that may seem small or seem unimportant at the time or frivolous, but, you know, don't make your product images too small. That's, especially if you can't zoom or enlarge them, because that frustrates customers and they'll go somewhere else. Something as simple as that will send a customer walking. You don't want to, you know, be all victim to that. Accurate descriptions are important. That's something that should be double-checked, triple-checked. Generally, when you have a product detail page, it has a longer description, and they have something called a quick view, which I'm sure you've seen. Usually it's a little button on top of the product image that lets you sort of open up a little more detailed description of the product without actually leaving the page. That's something else that's important. Quick view, I think we expect to stay on the page, which is nice, because you don't actually want to navigate away every time and have to come back to your search results. But I think that sometimes folks forget that quick view really is meant to stay on the page. You're not supposed to move. So if your quick view goes to a new page, I would probably think about changing that. It's usually a short, quick description, too. And something else that product information sort of benefits from is videos. Customers seem to like videos. I know I do. Sometimes I'll go and look for a video on a product before I buy it, even if it's not on the set I normally shop from. But those are pretty good and make selling a little bit easier. Some things to talk about your product right on the description itself. Is it a top seller? You know, make a little bright graphic that says this is a top seller, almost sold out, things like that. You're going to want to show links to all the ratings and reviews. And I think of IKEA when I say this example, but anything that you're going to have to build from scratch or from instructions, it's really helpful to have the link to the PDF or the instructions. That's great, especially when you lose the manual, which I've done many times and had to go get the manual back. Inventory status is something that is really helpful. You know, if something's almost sold out, that can sort of make somebody want to buy it right then. That's usually a pretty good idea. And let's see. And then, okay, this is what I'm talking about next. So as far as products go, I wanted to show this example. I thought this was pretty great. I was looking for a lamp a couple of weeks ago when I came across this, and it had all the elements that I would look for. It has the ratings. It has reviews. I can read a review. I can write a review. There's some information here. I can zoom in. I can zoom out. I can also get in touch with help. I can also see the price. I can see that it's marked down 40%. Generally, I think it's a really great representation of how it should look. I also have share buttons down the bottom to go out to social networking. I can email this link. But something that kind of caught my eye, and I'm not sure if it comes across well on your screen, which I'll show you in a second, but I was actually kind of surprised because I really liked this lamp when I noticed this. When I zoomed in, and I saw that the shade is dented. So I thought, well, that's not very good. And I actually looked at it for a while in a bunch of different angles, and it actually is dented. So think of all that work they put into making this such a great page. And then it gets kind of dinged by something like that. So I'm a fan of this company, so I probably would buy the lamp because I know that they have good quality products. So I know it's nothing against them, but kind of something funny to think about. You know, sort of images are an afterthought. Don't let them be an afterthought because something like this could happen. Like I said, I'll probably still end up buying a lamp anyway. But let me talk about next is this whole personalization thing that I mentioned earlier. It's really important. It really is all about the customer today, just like all other websites. They want to make sure you know that they know who you are. And that's achieved through things like profiling and personalization. So to give you a quick rundown of what personalization is, it's sort of like creating tailored experiences for all the customers. And so I could come in or one of my friends could go in and we'll get a completely different experience based on what we've bought in the past and what we've looked at now. So even a first-time shopper to your site, based on where they click when they first get there or even where they come from, the IP they come from. You can sort of personalize there and make settings for that. But what it does, I think generally personalization is going to increase all the transaction sizes, and it's going to, you know, build shopper loyalty because they're going to feel like, oh, they know me. They want me to be their customer. So as far as driving shopper satisfaction and retention, they're going to tell their friends, which is great. And, again, they're going to help out social networking. If they hang out with that and they, you know, click a like, they're going to make your site do better that way. And I thought this was kind of funny about having a crystal ball. I mean, it's sort of tongue-in-cheek, but because analytics has been around for so long, but it really is a crystal ball. I mean, you can really see what they're doing. You can sort of predict what's going to happen next and plan accordingly and make your customers feel pretty unique, special, and really important. You can see where they're coming from. Where are they leaving? You know, and why are they leaving? Where are they going? You know, those are the kind of things you want to know. Those drive better business decisions, and you can be more strategic when you're planning, I know, things that you're going to stock. So if you can see what they were looking at or what they looked at after that. It is a crystal ball. I think it's great. And if you could add one thing, I would definitely add analytics. And that's something else that it sort of facilitates is the whole retargeting, which is, based on what I looked at on someone's site or what I put in my cart or even, you know, my purchase history or such like that. The ads that are served up and the coupons and things I get, that's sort of retargeting. They want to get me back there. They want to get me to finish that sale. Another thing that's great, when I look at an abandoned cart, you know, I can send them offers and entice them to come back and buy that. So another thing, it's knowledge. It's really a gold mine. So really, really important and definitely drives the best parts of personalization. And, you know, if you need another reason, they like personalization. You know, according to Forrester, personalized retail websites, they like them, which I think is great. And something else about personalization and sort of profiling, I thought this DNA double helix was kind of fun because it really is all about you individually. So this is sort of going up. I mean, it sort of started out slow, but personalization is on fire. Everybody's doing it. It's really worth it because it does increase your average order value. It increases customer loyalty. Word of mouth, Facebooking, all that is going to, you know, just increase, and all because you decided to pay attention to something that was already happening, customers on your website, because you can see what they're doing. Because everything that you're going to need to know to make those personalization decisions, to show them a different product next, that's all there for you, past and present. So you can sort of dig into that analytical data and see what's happening and make your decisions going forward. Again, personalization is critical. It's essential. It's growing. It's growing in importance because merchants want to grow their conversion. They want to give every customer, regardless whether they buy something for $10 or they spend $1,000, they want to give them a targeted experience, and that's more effective with personalization. And making every customer feel unique, special, and appreciated is definitely good. And I put in this little percentage here that personalization is one of the important merchandising tactics in web retailing. That's, I think, echoes without saying. But it really is sort of like having an extra employee that's working for you all the time, that's looking into your data, seeing what your customers are doing. They don't quit. They collect all the data, and it's there for you to look at and dig through. And that's, like I said, a gold mine. And, it works. Personalization works. Makes people feel good. I like to shop at sites that know who I am. I think it's great. And this internet retailer has their top 500 retailers that they do every year, and half do it this year. A third of them did it last year. So I think that's pretty telling. Some of those retailers do very well, and I think it's a testament to how well personalization works and what a good investment it is to see those retailers doing that. Something else that you can do to your website that's going to make you more successful, at least put you on the path to make you more successful, is giving your users, your shoppers, control. And by giving them control, I mean letting them share content that they generate, whether it's uploading photos of products, they got the computer and they want to share that photo so other people can see it, they can write a product review or they check the stars and give a product rating. And you know, because everything is social, everything is shared. People want to see these reviews. And if I go to a website and I want to rate something I bought, especially if it's a good rating, Generally, I don't think people are malicious. They're not out to really give you a bad rating. I think for the most part, somebody might call customer service first if they had a bad experience. Yeah, they might go the extra step and put it in writing. But I think people are being a little more cautious about saying things like that. But again, I think you could set up your controls that you don't actually have to display that rating, which I'm not sure is ethical, but, you know, you do what you like. But I think also user-generated content is things like commenting on a blog post or a press release or a news story, people giving their opinions, and that's a good thing. You know, because if your customer can add it to your site, it qualifies as user-generated content. So something else I thought was interesting, and this was just my thought, product reviews and ratings, I know that we don't really talk to our neighbors all that much anymore, kind of busy. And they used to say that technology was driving people apart and you know, making them less social, where here we are full circle, we're all becoming social again through technology, which is interesting. And it's technology that's sort of giving a rebirth to that whole ask your neighbor, you know, what they want or what they think of that product. So that was funny because they really do. That's really what I do. I check the product ratings, and even though I don't know these people, I probably never meet these people, they tend to be pretty reliable. And I'm not the only one that thinks so. People generally do look through product ratings. Interesting number I saw was that 85% of customers trust shopping advice they get on Twitter. So I think that's pretty good. That speaks to it. People look at reviews all the time. And like I said, they generally tend to trust the product reviews that they see. And that's something that could really turn browsers into buyers. You know, if they get to see user-generated product reviews, they trust other shoppers. And like I said, it's the online version of asking your neighbor. But anyway, subjective opinions like that, they can, you know, let them share them on Facebook. It's a really an excellent opportunity to sort of generate new business. Because if I see that my friends on Facebook really like this merchant, maybe I'll check them out. Maybe I'll buy something. So speaking of moving on to that, there's something else that's extremely popular and making lots and lots of money is mobile commerce. And that's not mini commerce. There's sort of like a confusion there that mobile commerce is just like a mini version of your regular e-commerce site, which it isn't. I'll show you in a minute. But most people know this. But it's not mini commerce, and it's not a small, tiny piece of market. It's not a little amount of cash that you should sort of brush under the table. It's a big market. I mean, and by 2015, they're looking at $28.7 billion. So I would recommend getting into that. And just this year alone, in 2010, USM commerce sales hit $2.9 billion. And it's expected to jump, I think, something like $5.3 billion this year. So something to think about. And the thing about going mobile, which I'll talk about next, is it's not a mini version of your regular e-commerce site. It's very different from your regular e-commerce site. And something funny, you really don't know how well it looks until you actually pick up the phone and check it. Pick up that particular device, whether it's an iPhone or a BlackBerry or different. And something else that is important is you think about branding, how much time and effort you put into your e-commerce site to make it your brand, to protect your brand integrity. You have to make sure that you carry that over to your mobile site because customers actually perceive your mobile site as part of your e-commerce site, which they should. They're part of the same brand. But if they have a negative experience or they sort of have a disconnect there, they're going to kind of wonder, well, is this a merchant I can trust? I don't know why it's different. And I think we actually have a poll. We were kind of curious to see how many of you out there have mobile sites or are looking to get mobile sites. Yep, we do.
Please answer the poll. Do you have a mobile commerce site? Yes, no, but we have firm plans to launch one in the future, or no?
Anyway, while you're taking the poll, I'll wait for the results to come in. I'll talk about a couple of different things.
We're actually closing the poll. The poll is now closed, and we'll show you the results.
It must be invisible. It's invisible to me.
Oh. Erica, we had 11% of the vote say yes.
Oh, good.
45% no, but we have firm plans to launch, and 45% said no.
Okay. Those sound pretty in line with the way the research I've done. It seems about the same. But 11%, that's a good number. So the mobile commerce we're talking about here is just the idea of it. Just one of the many things that are adding it to the list of success factors you should sort of consider. And thinking about mobile commerce topics, everything from, you know, the colors you should use and how many selections you should have for categories, that could cover dozens of webinars, and as well as something called mobile apps. Those could be webinars themselves. So generally what we wanted to say here is, you know, we wanted to address that mobile commerce is something that you should really think about. And if you are thinking about it, just make sure you're consistent. So if I'm a regular shopper on your e-commerce site and I have things like wish lists and user lists and I've made purchases in the past, I want to make sure that when I log into the mobile site, I'm still able to access my same user information, my same list. You know, it's not a different experience. It has to be an extension, albeit a cleaner, smaller experience, but an extension of the experience on the e-commerce site. And just to wrap it up for mobile with a couple of pros and cons, pros is that it's generally quicker to develop and cheaper. It's accessible on most any device with a mobile browser. Some cons. I'll give a couple of cons. When you lose connectivity and there's no access, I don't know if that's happened to you, that's a bummer. So if something to pay attention to is to save the cart contents or save the cart contents at every step. So if they do lose connectivity, which, you know, gets dropped all the time, even on the most expensive phone, on the best network, and you're paying through the nose for the best service, you're going to get dropped. You're going to lose connectivity. So anyway, make sure of that. And this one last con is it's limited functionality, but I think that is more of a pro, because generally when you're on a mobile phone, you don't want that full-on e-commerce site experience because it's just too much information. So slimming it down to be really easy to use, I think, is the goal. And with that in mind, you know, good sites versus bad sites, obviously it's easy to point at good sites. People with the largest budget are probably going to have something spectacular on their mobile site. But this is a really good one, a fun one. A colleague of mine had on one of his presentations, and I stole from him, but I've used this Domino's mobile site, and it's actually really fun, and they give you real-time when your pizza is going to get there, like literally till it gets to the door. My nephew thinks this is great, so it's kind of fun. But the whole idea is, you know, keep it simple. You know, limit your categories, limit the links, limit the depth, prioritize. You know, think about what people look for most. You know, again, dig into your analytical data, you know, and prioritize, put those up first. Let's see. Anyway, another thing I want to mention that mobile screens, they can be kind of difficult to read, so they always recommend that you design in high contrast, and again, making sure that you save transactions at every step, because chances are, once in a while, you're going to get dropped or you're hanging out on one of those. Something else I wanted to talk about is how going social is becoming important, and I actually have mentioned this a lot earlier in the presentation, but how important it is when someone likes one of your products, that's great. Facebook can be a real pusher as far as people buying things. It's kind of a key factor now. If I didn't have time to read ratings and reviews, I might just see a like and be sort of confident that I could go after that and be satisfied with what I bought, which is a good thing. Some other things to talk about, some traits of some of the successful sites, general traits of them. Sort of top level. I mean, nobody wants to go into an online store and have no idea where to go. Because it's the same in a regular store. You don't want to have that kind of experience. That would not be fun. And a way to sort of keep that from happening is to make sure that your navigation is simple. It's intuitive. You don't really need directions to sort of know where you're going. Because you don't want to make first impressions the last impression. You don't want them to leave right away. Sitemaps are good. Make sure you have a link to your sitemap. If you don't have a sitemap, I would build one. I think those are phenomenal things to have. It's a map, so if they are lost, they can always go there. It's not probably the most fun way to find your way through a site, but again, it's a good resource. And something else, I think that the retailers that are the most successful, these online merchants that They think like a customer all the time. And that can mean something as simple as shopping your own site. I mean, I'm sure maybe sometimes they do that, but it must be hard to kind of, you know, step outside yourself and see it like a real customer. But I think it's important. I think you have to train yourself to see your own site as your customer would see it and not as how you want to see it. Because remember, you're trying to sell to them, not yourself. So just something to think about. With that in mind, the other thing I thought was important is when you're looking for products or when you're using the search, I would, you know, returning relevant results, that's great, but try never to give them nothing. Nobody likes to have nothing. I mean, you can always have it show that one of your top-selling products shows up under there, even though they didn't find what they wanted. It's something that you might want to see. And checkout. Checkout's important. I mean, they say statistically the majority of carts are abandoned at the checkout because something either it takes too long, there's too many steps. You know, try to aim for four or less steps. People like to see these secure socket layer certificates. They like to see Better Business Bureau, VeriSign, because this instills that trust, and they feel like they can shop with you and they're not going to get their identity stolen. Anything that makes that easier for the customer is great. Something else, try to be flexible with paying. You know, try to accept more cards. You know, can you be more flexible? Look at what you take now. Do you just take PayPal? Do you just take credit cards? Can you take things like Google Checkout or Amazon payments? You know, the more flexible you can be, the more people you're going to satisfy. And that's just a given. That includes things like gift cards and gift certificates and credits and something. Actually, I heard recently that people you can use to entice customers to stick around is if you give them, instead of making them pay for shipping, you take that shipping amount and you give them a store credit. It might be something simple like $7, but they're going to think about that $7 and they're going to want to spend it because, you know, it's money. Nobody wants to leave money around. So something to think about. And just taking the time there, make sure I'm on time. Cross-sell and upsell. This is like another extra employee. I think this is great. It's someone always working on your site. Think away that the checkout counter is at your favorite store, your supermarket. Things that are placed there are there to entice the buyer. When you think about an upsell, you know, that's generally a tactic to get a customer to spend more money. So if they were looking at one television that was $200, you might, you know, float an ad on there that says other people bought or people are interested in this, and it's, you know, a $600 television. So I don't know. Sometimes having that right in front of you is enticing enough to get you to think or at least investigate further and possibly buy that. So, and then a cross-sell is, you know, getting a customer to spend more or increase the average order value by adding more products from other categories than the products that they're looking at now. And just to touch on quickly, promotions as well. Like I said, we can't cover everything in this one webinar, but promotions are important. And those can be personalized to get people to buy what you want them to buy and, you know, give them coupon promotions, offer them discounts. The benefit is that you're going to keep a customer coming back. It's going to instill that goodwill. You're going to think, I'm an important customer to them, and I'm going to keep coming back. So we have, there we go, a little technical difficulty just for a second. But anyway, the benefit of cross-sell and upsell, it's going to increase your average order value. I don't think there's any drawbacks to cross-sell and upsell. If nothing else, if they don't buy it, so what? You know, at least you had it there. They may come back later and buy it. Something else that they said, discounts and free shipping can push upsell and cross-sell. Yeah. And a few more things I want to talk about regarding success criteria. And we've talked about most of these already, but, you know, it's important, so to mention it again. Going from mobile and social, that's really taken off, and personalized shopping, that's definitely on the agenda for most shoppers. Be accurate. Keep things up to date. See if you can't put in some shopper-generated content, those product ratings and reviews. See how your shoppers are shopping your site. You know, see what they like. Are you having too many steps? Is there something you can do to make the site faster? Can I give them more ways to pay, more ways to ship? Can I show them real-time inventory and when their order is going to get there? And not stopping at the you know, after they pay. You know, make sure you keep that conversation going with the, you know, you're going to send them order status and things like that, but follow up like a month later, you know, see what their experience was like. If people actually do like to have you ask. So I know one retailer I talked to recently said that they, in the very beginning when they were getting started, said they took the time to actually put a handwritten thank you note in all of their packages, which I thought was interesting. Obviously, if you have a huge operation, you can't do that, but just sort of just thinking along the lines that you should be thinking, which is I want to appeal to every customer and make them feel unique and important. So, intuitive navigation is definitely important. A couple of other things I want to talk about quickly is I think this is all about empowered e-commerce. So, again, it's all about the customer. You can engage them consistently. You're going to know what they want. They're going to know that they come there and they can trust you. You can identify and overcome all those interaction challenges that might happen if you're not doing empowered commerce. You can basically guide them with contextual offers. You can sort of predict what they're going to look at and send them on the journey that you create, obviously taking in mind what they've looked at before. What you should do is regularly test all of your offers and promotions, doing things like A-B testing and seeing how that comes out. Because it can sort of help you be strategic when you're planning in the future and make smarter decisions. And again, when you're thinking about engaging all of your customers, it's basically having a consistent sort of conversation that's progressive that goes on, and that's just going to keep generating better and better results. Because, like, I think they're going to go tell their friends. So when you're thinking about where to begin, I think the first thing to overcome is the thought process. It's really hard to stop thinking like a business owner and to put yourself in your customer's shoes. So that may be a process in its own. So once you get there, once you can stop thinking like a retailer instead think like a customer, you know, go through your own site. And I say shop your own site. So treat it like you would if you were a customer. What do you see? What's good? What's bad? And on top of that, go to some of your competitors' sites, because I guarantee you're going to find some interesting things there. But this has to become a habit. You have to put yourself in the place of the customer, because otherwise I think that you're kind of missing out. And something else I noticed is that retailers, they're pretty forthcoming with their best practices. And I think they all, nice enough, have a general interest in helping the other guy. So, you know, they don't want you to take their business away, but if you ask them, what are you doing that you think that works, I think that you wouldn't come across a retailer that wouldn't share something with you. At least that's in my experience. Just to sort of talk about some of the improvements we covered, because we couldn't cover them all, and how personalization is important. It's going to help you sort of build more business. It's going to help you engage more shoppers. You know, building out those targeted offers is very important. Part of your reviews and ratings, those are gold when it comes to you know, getting more customers. We talked about a few ways to sort of reduce cart abandonment, and also how cross-sell and upsell is also something that you should think about implementing. And just a few takeaways. These are just my own kind of thoughts here. I don't think that there's a silver bullet for success. What works for one merchant might not work for another online merchant. You could do all these great things to your site, and the stars align, and there's an event that day that sort of overshadows what you just did on your really great site. So it might just be bad luck. But you have to keep after it. And what you have to do is you have to test and test and test everything. And then you have to go back and you have to test it again. You have to really look and examine how can I make this better for my customer and all of the customers that they're going to send my way, because that's money in the bank right there. So that's really all I have. So I'm going to actually thank you and hand it back over to Audra.
Thank you, Erica, for that engaging presentation. We have some great questions that came in during your presentation. I'd like to encourage you all to continue submitting questions using the webinar toolbar throughout this Q&A or via Twitter at #landing2cart. If your questions are not answered, we will follow up with you on an individual basis. We also would love your feedback on this presentation by taking a quick survey at www.surveymonkey.com/landing2cart. There is a hyperlink to this page that you can click on in your chat box. On to the questions. Our first question, Erica, is what is bundling and why is it useful?
Well, bundling is great and very tempting, especially around the holidays. Sometimes there can be a lot of choices when it comes to shopping online, and it can be kind of confusing. It can be frustrating. And I just might get so upset or just so confused that I just leave altogether. I think they call it a paradox of choice or something when a shopper can't determine the best option. Anyway, what you can do is set up bundling, and that's a sort of like a product package or a group of products that are sold as a single product. So a laptop, which is normally sold on its own, could also be packaged or bundled with an LCD monitor and, like a wireless keyboard, things like that. So sort of giving you the whole package, and they're things that make sense together. I mean, you wouldn't bundle things that didn't work together or didn't at least relate to each other. And it's a good way to, up your average order value.
Thank you. And our next question is, we hear a lot about multi-store. What is the benefit and how is it done?
So multi-store, like multi-sites. Thing is that is it's a, let me think. I could to talk about this. You'd have your main site, and then you want to have extra stores or e-stores. If you're reaching out into different countries, you wanted to have a French store, a British store. You wanted to have a store in Japan. And each store has sort of a unique internet address. It has a unique look and feel. It could be in a different language. And pricing could be different, but it shares the same administrative interface and the same infrastructure as your parent site or your original e-commerce site. And franchises kind of do this too. So if you had one main site and franchises like Dunkin' Donuts, there's a lot of Dunkin' Donuts franchises, they could all have their own website and sort of take advantage of all of the content that the home site has, but again, make it unique to their own. So it's a way of use fewer resources, and you can, when you're sharing administration between all these stores, lowest cost. It definitely achieves better scalability, and it's pretty cost effective because you operate low volume, sort of little niche e-commerce sites.
Great. And our third question, can you share some ways to lower shopping cart abandonment?
Most carts are abandoned in the checkout cycle. Usually that's when the bad news happens. It happened to me recently with something I wanted from a merchant, which they put on sale, which was a great sale, but it wasn't until I got to almost the last page where I found this handling fee, which is something like a third of what the article itself cost. Just sent me packing. Something you can do is, that's the several things you can do. Make sure that your cart is sort of, tell everything up front. Don't hide things like shipping rates. Don't make it hard to learn, how much it's going to cost to ship it to me or ship it to my cousin. Make it easy to see. Make sure that the pricing that you're using is competitive. Look at your competitors, see what they're charging. Look at MSRP. Are you over? Are you under? Things like that are pretty obvious, but something that you could do, guest checkout. People don't necessarily want to sign in and create a profile on your site. I mean, maybe they're just shopping for a one-off birthday gift, or maybe they're just trying you out, so they don't want to necessarily give you all that information. People are more and more protective of their personal information, which is understandable. So I think merchants need to sort of respect that and give a guest checkout, because if they have a good experience, they might come back again for the next gift or say, I'm going to come back and shop for myself. What else can we do? I talked about rates and fees, like shipping and tax. Don't have any secrets there. If something is going to take 3 months to deliver, make sure you put that out there. You don't want to have to check out and realize that, this is great. I'm going to have it in my house in 3 months when you expected it within a week if you went to one of their competitors. One-page checkout is pretty popular. I think that's something that people are trying to do to sort of, lessen the burden of having to click through all these pages and make an extenuatingly long checkout process. So if you can make it short and sweet, I think that you're going to have a lot less people leaving.
Next question. What is the biggest challenge in starting an e-commerce business?
Let's see. let's see, probably getting customers to know who you are, finding your customers, or making sure they can find you. If you don't know about online marketing, if you don't know about search engine optimization, you know, it can be hard. It's, you know, marketing, essentially marketing your site or marketing your store or your company can be the most challenging part, and that can probably take the most time to do. Even if you build, like, an awesome store and you have, like, fantastic products and you've done everything right, it doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to find you or buy unless they, you know, they can associate your company name or your domain or associate your company name with something positive. And they're making your store visible to buyers. You know, you're going to have to do things like, oh, God, make up some sort of search engine optimization, come up with an online marketing strategy, you know, take up some online ads, you know, pricing out banner ads. It can be expensive at first, things like that, pay-per-click, but it's worth it because it's going to generate that initial sort of initial kick you're going to have to get yourself going. And then also taking out, I think, on social sites like Facebook, setting up a Facebook store. That's a great way to get recognized. It's, I think it would be a lot easier to start, or it lessens the challenge now than it would have maybe 5 years ago with Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter around.
And our next question, what do we need to know about collecting taxes online?
I'm laughing because that's probably four webinars in itself. What I can tell you is the taxes are real. You know, every retailer is subject to the law. There's different reporting schedules and different ways you have to keep compliant, depending on what state you're in, depending on what you sell, depending on, some states you sell to, you don't have to charge tax, some you do. I guess the short answer is I would ask somebody that knows more about the law. Sales tax selling goods is different from selling services. Sales tax for buying goods or services online is different. Generally, my advice on that is to really investigate it because the sales tax laws, they can be really confusing. And, you know, for first-time merchants and for, you know, merchants that have been around for years and years and years, they're always changing. Their laws are constantly changing. They're being reviewed. And then, like I said, depending on where you are, country, state, city, it's going to be different. So it's something to think about. I do know that pretty much U.S. tax requirements are generally the same across the board, but it can be different, like I said, for what you sell, whether it's goods or services. So the short answer is investigate. An attorney is probably a good place to start.
Great. Thank you, Erica. That will be a wrap-up of the Q&A portion of the presentation, and we thank everyone for participating. As a reminder, we will email you the link to this presentation, including PDF, so you can view it again and share with colleagues.